Hey, Sam.
Hey Sam, how are you?
Good, you? Hey y'all, I'm Sam Carey.
And I'm Sam Simo.
And this is Good You Therapy Podcast. Here at Good You Therapy, we like to open up discussions about mental health and just talk about a range of different topics. We're hoping to get some more guests on soon. And we really just want to open up this space and share some information for therapists, clients, and anybody who's interested in talking about mental health.
Yeah, and speaking of sharing and spreading the word of the podcast, be sure to spread it to friends and family that you feel like might benefit from listening to certain episodes. If you're a clinician, and maybe feel like a client could benefit from one of the episodes, maybe sharing that one with them. Just getting the word out, helping us with our small little podcast, just to spread the word and be on the lookout for future episodes. If you have any topic ideas, please reach out. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok. Good you. Dot therapy. Now back to the show. Today we're talking about difficult conversations to kind of go off of our episode from last week that was rupture and repair. So when we talk about difficult conversations, we all have them, right? And why are certain conversations more difficult than others? What makes us uncomfortable? Is it the topic at hand? Is it the person we're talking about it with? Is it the way we're feeling, or is it the way we fear maybe the person who we want to talk to might take our message? So there are a lot of different things that make certain conversations more difficult than others. And I don't know about you, Sam, but in my counseling sessions, this comes up a lot, being able to learn how to let someone know if they hurt me, or if they said something that was out of line, or if there is a rupture. Like, how do I approach a conversation, repair that? That's a lot of the things my clients bring in here.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think it's funny because personally, I identify as a difficult conversation connoisseur. I love difficult conversations. I hate them and I love them because I've talked to a lot of clients and we have to work through values and like where that comes up. And we've also done an episode, Core Values, where we discuss like how to figure out what your values are and how they play into your life. I think the way that people show up for difficult conversations has a lot to do with our values. And so for me, like honesty and accountability are two of my top two values. So having difficult conversations is like a core part of living into my values. And I also think that Sam and I talk a lot, and we have discussed like me having more of an anxious attachment style and her having more of an avoidant attachment style. And I think my anxious attachment style also plays into that, like wanting to
Talk about it
get
right
things out.
now.
Well, I want to understand. I want to understand and I want to know. I need to
I know, because you and
know.
Craig are the same.
I know.
And
Sam's
I'm like,
husband is my twin.
this is something I talked so much about in the earlier episodes. When I just throwing out how to talk about things with people, and how I used to, and our early relationship times, like he'd want to talk and I'd be like, we can just like go to sleep and forget all about it and wake up and everything's fine. And he's like, that's so unhealthy. And I'm like, what do you mean? Because that's all I knew, right? Like, that's all I knew and that's all that was modeled for me. And some people listening here might be able to relate to that, that's all that was modeled to them, is that avoidance piece, and that we just rug sweep and we wake up and everything's fine.
Yep.
With my family, it was, hey, are you hungry? That was the reconnection. So guess where I had struggles with growing up? Food.
Food.
Yeah, so I mean, like, being able to have a healthy conversation and have these difficult conversations in a way that's uncomfortable, but in a healthy, uncomfortable way, right? This is where this piece is going to fall in today, and you might be more like Sam, where you might be the pursuer. Or you might be more like me and you might be more the avoidant. We also have different labels for other pieces that might come into play about how we might react in these difficult conversations. So stay tuned and see which one you are.
And I also just want to throw out that as far as like partnerships go or like family dynamics, I feel like so often opposites are paired up. Like Sam and I being really good friends doing this podcast together, Sam and my husband are like the same in their communication style struggles. And me and Sam's husband are like, oh my God, you just get it. And it's funny. Because, like, I think that having friendships like that, because you are not my only friend like that, I've had several friendships where, like, the partner is so much like me. And, but what's that done? Having friends that are a lot like my partner, it's been really helpful because I have a lot more, like, patience and empathy for people that are just a little bit further removed than the person I live with. And I think being able to learn from you guys about like what that experience is like helps me create empathy for my partner. So just
Absolutely,
throwing it out
same.
there. Like, have friends that are different from you and aren't just echo chambers for your experience, because like the connection is super helpful and having that different experience is really helpful too.
Yeah, I agree. I took a lot of seeing, and I like that you said that too, because this is something that Craig and I talk about a lot of the time, is that there is a difference that between how we react or don't react, maybe how we respond to friends versus how we react to partners, because there's a level of trust that you and your partner have. Not that I don't trust my friends like that, but there's a different level of like intimacy involved of what they know versus what my friends know, and it's so much more deeper. That and seeing them every day and just having that trust there is, I know that if I can be my full self and express how I'm feeling in this moment, I know this person isn't going to judge me for that. And I don't fear that person's judgment like I might for people outside of my relationship.
Yeah. I think I had a similar experience to like that connection that I have with my partner with like roommates as well, though, like really close friends that I lived with, because
Every
it's
day.
like seeing somebody every day, seeing somebody like at their worst when they're sick, when they're having a bad day, like just knowing you, there's a level of safety.
Yeah, that
So
vulnerability.
when we're thinking about difficult conversations, though, I think a lot of people avoid them. And my husband brought up such a good point when we were talking about this episode. He was like, you know, I think a lot of times people avoid the acute discomfort that comes with having a difficult conversation, because they want to avoid the discomfort, right? But what ends up happening is they end up staying in chronic discomfort because of the resentment, because of the stress, because of the tension, because of the unspoken things. And so it's really helpful to be able to actually express that, get it out, find healthy ways to get that tension and stress out of your body.
I love that he said that because that puts verbiage to something that I've experienced for a long time. And it's true because I also had another friend who put another like way to look at it. She's like, sometimes I literally feel like I'm choking. Like, especially like if I'm like holding back my tears or something like that, right? Like I feel like I'm actually physically choking. And all because I'm not letting it out, right? And that's so true. Like the fact that we'll go to the lengths of that physical pain and discomfort to avoid such necessary conversations and connection because we're afraid of the vulnerability. We fear that, what that might look like. And I've been listening to this audiobook recently, and I don't think that there's a physical copy of this book because it's Brené Brown, but she's speaking at a conference, and it's called The Power of Vulnerability. And I 10 out of 10 recommend it to anyone listening, and especially any clinicians listening, for you to listen, then refer clients to this audiobook as well, because it truly has taught me so much on shame and vulnerability and how we can unintentionally project that onto others, especially as parents or as partners, because when we're at that comfort level and seeing this person every day, where we project a lot of our own shame during these difficult conversations. And that's why it's hard for us to go back and have more of them, because there's now shame involved in the vulnerability.
Yeah. I'm laughing because I remember when I was like struggling, I have like such an irrational fear of the dentist, right? I had some dental trauma as a child, and Fair. I have an irrational fear of the dentist. And I may have talked about this before, but it's a problem. So I didn't go to the dentist for like 6 years because I would like make an appointment and then I'd be like, nope, you know what? Can't do that as an adult, right? So like, yeah. So I went about a little over a year ago, and I had to be sedated for a tooth cleaning because I was in that much of a panic. And then when we left, I was like, oh, wow, that really wasn't that bad. And so I scheduled my 6 months to go back. And then something ended up happening. The hygienist had to cancel, whatever, whatever. So I was like, oh, I don't really want to go back to the dentist. So it's like, my point is like, the further away we get from doing mm-hmm. that scary thing, mm-hmm. the bigger and the more scary that it looks.
Yes. Yes.
And we can really psych ourselves out, like when we're like, ooh, I really need to have a conversation with this person about this thing that happened. And then it's like, but now's not a good time because I don't want to upset them.
Right.
Ooh, but you know, now it's been like 2 weeks. I really, I don't know if I can bring it up now. Yeah. Oh, but things are so good now, even though I'm still mad as heck about it. And so yeah. I think that buildup can happen really easily.
Yeah. And how talking about having difficult conversations, not in the heat of the moment, right? Like, if it is happening and we are angry, we're not ready for a difficult conversation, right? We're not ready to have a productive, difficult conversation. But depending on your ability to regulate, right?
I know, I'm just thinking like from a personal experience of mm-hmm. like, when I'm really angry and I'm feeling really overwhelmed and I'm like trying to talk to Tyler and I'm upset, the second that he leans in and it's like, hey, like I'm here and I see you. Can you tell me more about what's going on? I immediately like drop down into like my parasympathetic, like calming response, that leaning in. Mm-hmm. And I think when we talk about that in EFT training of like, the withdrawer and the pursuer, which is kind of like the anxious and avoidant attachment styles, and how for the anxious person, like a lot of times that looks like getting bigger and protesting yeah. and like trying to be heard. And not for everybody, but for a lot of us, like once that person leans in when we are angry and big, it's like, oh, that's what I needed. I just need you to see me. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's all about like getting to know yourself and getting to know the people that you're having these interactions yes. with.
Yeah, you, and that's very true, right? Because like when and this is going to be a different piece, like for me, and I hear what you're saying, because Craig's I think the same way. Like if I go in with like a physical touch or leaning in, like attuning in that way, like that really helps him connect and get back grounded. However, if I'm in a place where I'm like, we're doing this right now, then it's hard for me to actually get into a place where I can have a difficult conversation, because I think as the withdrawer, that pursuer is like the threat to me in the moment, right? It's like I need my safe corner. And mm-hmm. With a lot of avoidant attachment styles, like We talked about co-regulation in one of our episodes. I think Stop Regulating, Listen. Co-regulation, how important that is. But when you're in avoidant attachment, you most likely grew up doing self-regulation, solo regulation for a long time. So co-regulation is scary. It's like ambiguous. Like it's harder to do as an avoidant attachment style, right? Whereas I know that.
I'm just gonna say we really need to do an episode on anxious versus avoidant attachments.
It would be so helpful, I think, because that is a big piece. And I think that's gonna be our next one, isn't it?
No, we have a guest coming next week.
That's right. So the one after that we'll do anxious versus avoidant. Yeah. So I think the biggest piece though is that we are able to know who it is we're talking to. So let's, for example, I think a lot of the times when I have clients coming in wanting to have difficult conversations with someone, it is someone who tends to be more passive, wanting to talk to someone who's more aggressive. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like people who have more assertive or aggressive communication styles are more likely to go into a difficult conversation. But someone with a more passive style might struggle more to actually get into
Right.
that conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's about also like, yes, passive will struggle with getting in any difficult conversation, even if it's with another passive person. But the big fear is the aggressive, like assertive versus aggressive, by the way, two different things, right? Assertive is that healthy level of communication where I can advocate for myself. I can also empathize and look in from your point of view. And, but I'm able to also just assert like, this is my boundary. This is where I'm having issues. When we talk about aggression, we can talk about verbally aggressive, physically aggressive. This is the my way or highway. I do not bend for anybody. And we might look at blaming, shaming, those kinds of things, right? So if we're passive and struggling with approaching others to have difficult communication, then this is going to be a really helpful piece because it is uncomfortable. It does feel like a threat. And heads up right now, even with all these steps, we might not have the exact piece that we were hoping to get. But I have a lot of clients that come back and they're like, I was shocked by how well that went. And when we take away old habits of certain ways we might have initially brought up things or avoided things, we tend to be pretty surprised about how the conversations can go.
Yeah. I think that's a great like way to kind of go into talking about our recipe
yes
for difficult conversations.
Yes.
Sam and I have been really kind of looking at what is it that we need in order to have a successful conversation that might be about a difficult topic. And
we're gonna bake a pie.
Yeah, we actually are both bakers, fun fact.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah, and we actually need to be baking in the next. I know, we might have to wait and go next week.
Yeah, okay, we'll talk about that when we get off today.
Yes, but Sam and I are actual bakers, and so we are going to help you bake a difficult conversation
I
by
love
today.
That, yes.
So the first big piece that we kind of came up with is planning. Like when you're getting ready to go into a conversation, like obviously you know you need to have this difficult conversation if you're if you're thinking about having one, right? So planning that, like what do you want to get out of this conversation? What's realistic to get out of this conversation? Do you actually think that the person that you're talking to is going to be able to meet you in a regulated space? Maybe that looks like, do you need to call your partner while they're at work? Or do you need to wait till they get home? Let everybody make sure they have dinner. We are fed. Hangry is problematic. Do not talk to me when I'm hungry about something hard. Don't do it. My husband knows
Same.
too.
Same.
Like, if I'm being a jerk, the first thing he says is, "Hey, baby, when's the last time you ate something?" And I'm like, "Shut up!" And then
I
I
know,
eat a few
literally.
crackers.
First off, don't call me out on it. Just hand me food.
No,
That's it.
he does it so, oh God, like he's so sweet. He'll just be like, "Do you want me to get you something to eat, baby? It's been a couple hours." Because that's his, like, "I know that you're angry and hangry."
I'm
Yeah.
kind of scared.
But I think just being mindful, if you're like really worried about this conversation, being mindful about even that, like, are we both like regulated in the sense of like have water, have food, have sleep, like picking an ideal time to have this conversation, which there's not always the option to do that. But this is everything that we're talking about with this recipe is like ideal, right?
And the anticipation part of the planning is going to be the worst part of the difficult conversation itself, right? The broaching the topic and the anticipation of broaching the topic are the two hardest parts of the conversation. Once it starts flowing, it's flowing.
Yes.
And so really just being able to regulate yourself into being able to sit in a place, because we'll come up with excuses till the end of time, right? Of like, they're not in a good mood to have this conversation, or like Sam was saying earlier, I might have waited too long to have this conversation. Maybe I'll just wait for the next one to come up, because I'm sure that, you know. So no, just take a moment, right? And like, call a friend, call your support system, whoever it is, you know, read over your plan again. But the biggest piece about planning as well is to not get too rigid about your plan, right? We want to be flexible in our conversations, because it is almost 99% of the time never going to go the way we intended for it to go. Not necessarily meaning that that's a bad thing, because sometimes that means that it goes better than we expected, or we didn't expect maybe that for that person to see the situation from the perspective that they did, right? And like, so we might learn things that we couldn't have prepared for. So planning comes with also being okay with ambiguity. Yeah.
Ambiguity.
I just saw you cringe.
My favorite ambiguity. We all love that, right?
Yeah.
Yes. So while we're talking about the planning stage, like it is important just to have like in the back of your head, like all the kinds of factors that can go into it, but also like you don't want to get stuck in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
The next thing is also kind of to do with planning, but just like even as you're in it, like awareness, being aware of yourself, being aware of the other person, and setting an expectation of what am I, if I have never been able to have a conversation with this person without crying, maybe I need to have the expectation that I might cry a little bit. If this person has never been able to have a conversation with me without bringing else something else up, maybe I should set myself up with that expectation and maybe even start off with saying, "Hey, I know sometimes when I bring up difficult topics like that makes you want to bring up, it would be really, really helpful for me if you could just let me get out like what I'm thinking first and then like we can kind of take turns responding, like setting an expectation for yourself and for others, setting boundaries." And boundaries are not, "You are not going to talk to me like this," or "You are not going to do this." Boundaries sound like, I think they can be gentle. Like, "It would be really helpful for me if you did this. And if you don't, it's going to be really hard for me to continue this conversation." Or it can be like, "Hey, if you start yelling, I'm going to walk away for a minute and give you a second to cool down. And if you cannot stop yelling, I'm going to be done with this conversation."
Right, and goes back to that flexibility and rigidity and in boundaries as well, of that what are our non-negotiables. For myself, kind of like what Sam just said, is that piece where if we're in an argument or we're having a difficult conversation, which can sometimes sound like an argument, or they might just be an argument, but bringing in outside pieces that might have some similar things involved, but have nothing to do with the conversation and topic that we're having right now, that's not being discussed at this moment. So when someone does that, that's a deflection piece, right? We might do it ourselves, or we might be finding ourselves facing that deflection. And how I tend to handle that piece is, one, I've had that conversation with my husband before, of like, no, like, when we're on a subject, we stay on that subject. But so we can't help it sometimes when it does relate to other things and it gets brought up. And so my go-to is that I hear that that's bothering you, and I want to discuss that. I want to come back to that once we're finished this conversation, because that's separate from this one. But I don't want you to think that I'm ignoring that piece. I want to come back to that. So that way that person feels heard. And a lot of the time, because it's used as a deflection piece, they don't need to come back to it. A lot of the time it's used as a way to kind of deflect some of that uncomfy feeling that that person might be having, or that we might be having if we're doing it right. And that really wasn't a piece for us in the moment. It's because we're feeling under attack.
Yeah. I think you're making me think about like sessions, right? And clients deflecting when I'll bring something up and they're like, yeah, but this. And I'm like, it's interesting that every time I've brought this one thing up, you always deflect to something else. But what I do, like, especially at the end of a session when we're trying to wrap up and I can feel like, ooh, I'm not ready to go yet, so I keep bringing up new things, is I say, I'm going to pause you right there because that sounds super important. I'm going to write two or three words down and put that in my note. That way, next week when we come back, we can come
we can
back to
talk
this.
about it, yeah.
You can do that in a non-therapeutic setting. You can say, I hear you. I want to, because I'm going to be honest, my neurospiciness is I will forget. I will completely forget. So Tyler and I literally, like, if we're talking about stuff and it's important and it's like we're tired, it's nighttime or whatever, I'm like, I'm going to type this in a note. That way we can come back later and discuss and just check in. We might not need to just check in, like, hey, I know we talked about this. Do we want to go back to this? No. Cool. But you said something about how it's easy to like get onto a different subject. And I think that sometimes we also get where we snowball, right?
Yeah.
Where it's not even there, the person that we're talking to is getting defensive and trying to bring stuff up to us, but we snowball and say, well, I'm really upset that you didn't take out the trash. And you know what? You're also not helping with the vacuuming.
Yep,
and
yep,
while we're
yep.
at it, you really haven't helped with the kids lately either. And I'm kind of feeling really underappreciated and you don't ever listen to me. And then we start using
And
like
then I'm here
definitives.
ever, always. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And that's really, really, really detrimental to a healthy conversation.
And I've listened, Sam and Sam here are the most
Inspired.
most imperfect people, where, and we love that we're imperfect, right? We're humans. We're supposed to be imperfect. And we definitely do that. There's a piece that, and when I catch myself, I get that frustrating feeling towards myself, like we talked about last time, which is that shame piece, right? Of that, of what I'm doing here. And I'll even say, like, I know I'm not, I don't mean always, just like literally, like, and I sound so frustrated with poor Craig. Like, I'm like, literally, you know what I mean? I'm just mad right now and I just need a moment. I know you don't always do this. And like, I'm just like, I'm talking to him, but talking to me at the same time. You can do that too. You can, that's going to go into piece number four in here, that humility. But yeah, that piece of awareness of just knowing how we tend to go into conversations, right? If we do deflect, if we do blame shift, if we do shame unintentionally, right? Or if we guilt trip, or if we avoid or silent treatment, like, check in on how you tend to go into conversations and how we know that this person that we want to talk to tends to go into conversations.
Yes. And you talking about the conversation with your husband just makes me think about how I need to look up some actual studies about it, but I know that my therapist sent me a study about it at one point. We have different reactions to things in the morning, in the afternoon, and at night. At nighttime, that's like the depressy time. That's like your body systems are starting to shut down into like they're starting to depress to get ready for bed. So like trying to talk about really difficult things, like my reactions, and it's so funny because you said how you'll tell Craig, like, I know I'm not, it's not always, but this is just where I'm at right now. I'll literally tell Tyler, like, I'll cry and be like, I'm having a moment right now, and I'll probably wake up and feel completely different And that happens so much. Like, I will spiral at night.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've talked to a lot of clients about. Like, it is a thing where, like, if we try to, like, deal with all big life problems at the end of our day, at the end of our gas tank, at the end of our energy, like, there's chemical hormonal things going on that actually makes that more difficult. And
someone
so,
is sending a lit match in our gas tank.
Yes. And, but it's got like this much gas in it.
Yeah. So it's a mini bomb, but it's a bomb.
And so when we wake up in the morning, like, it can feel so totally different. And so I think that knowing that about yourself and knowing that about your setting when you're having a difficult conversation, because that's when it's really easy to snowball, right? And just like get bigger and get stronger. So the next piece that we kind of want to talk about, the third ingredient in our difficult conversation pie is courage.
Yeah.
Courage. Tell us about courage.
Courage. It takes an incredible amount of courage to be vulnerable, and difficult conversations take vulnerability anytime we have them. And how we are used to handling that feeling of vulnerability is dependent on the person. So for myself, can look like that avoidance piece. And when we talk about why that's being brought up so much, attachment styles, is because this really does play a big piece in our fears, right? So a lot of the times, like with anxious attachment, it's that fear of abandonment, and avoidant attachment is that fear of failure. But both, I think, go into a fear of abandonment, like failing that relationship, failing that conversation, right? But it just presented differently. And so it takes a lot of courage to overcome that fear and be vulnerable with someone, whether it's a boss, a stranger, a friend, a partner, someone you're an acquaintance with, or someone you love, you know? And so appreciating the difficulty that it takes for somebody to approach us is a huge piece. So being able to say, you know, thank you for bringing this to my attention that this was bothering you. Because if we can empathize and relate to how difficult that piece is for us a lot of the time, we can appreciate and empathize how hard it must have been for them to approach us. And so being able to acknowledge that piece of I'm glad that you felt comfortable enough to come talk to me about this. And I want to be here to walk this with you is going to really set a tone. So not only are we learning to approach and begin difficult conversations, but what we want to also teach in here is how to be approached with a difficult conversation, right? Because we can be on the other end of it.
Yeah. And, you know, as you're talking about that, I think what a gift for someone to be brave enough and to have the courage to do something so uncomfortable in this show of love. Because what's the point of a difficult conversation? So when I think about difficult conversations, if I'm going to have one, it's going to be, if it's at work, it's going to be because I, oops. If it's at work, I'm going to turn my reactions off. Hold on. I hate the reactions on here. If it's at work, it's going to be because my environment needs to change, right? And so that's going to be a little less personal a lot of times, except everything's personal to me. Ha ha ha. If it's at home, it's going to be because this is my partner and I care about them and my relationship with them is really important. If it's with a friend, it's same thing. Like, my relationship with you is important. I would like this to change or at least be made aware so that we can work together to find a solution. If it's an acquaintance, I might just be practicing. But typically, if we're having a really hard conversation with somebody, it's because we care and we want that relationship to be different and we want to keep that relationship. So what a gift for someone to give you that love and that courage and that vulnerability, because you mean enough to them to lean into that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and that piece where that bravery, that courage, it is always something that even if we don't necessarily appreciate or agree with or whatever it is, what's being brought up, we can appreciate that courage piece and that vulnerability piece of the human that's across from us that wants to strengthen the relationship.
Yeah, I think that human piece is really important. And, I think a lot of the episodes that we've talked about, I want to go back to something you said about attachment style a minute ago. A lot of the episodes that we talk about, like when we talk about regulation, we mentioned co-regulation. When we talked about anger, we talked about how that gets expressed at other people. Like, as human beings, we are relational beings. As therapists, we're like a whole different breed of that, like supercharged relational, like that our entire job is to build relationships with people. Like, you're paying us, and I hate when people are like, I'm paying people to care about me, but like, you're paying us for the skills and the education that we have. But the skills and the education that we have are how to build a relationship, how to help you get to your goals, how to understand like human behavior and like. And we don't get it right because we are humans. Like, we don't always get it right. We're not perfect, but like, the relational piece is everything. Like, positive outcomes in therapy, the biggest predictor of that is the therapeutic relationship. So, and like, I just went to that big group psychotherapy conference and we had a huge keynote speaker that did an entire like presentation and had like data backing up, like, your life will be longer if you have good connections. Like, people who are lonely, people who are isolated live less long, like they live shorter lives. They have more health issues. Like, it's just everything is relational. And so I do definitely want to do an episode where we talk about attachment styles and stuff and like how we relate to other people, because it's just so, it's in everything.
Yeah, and that's the piece of that, what is it? Was our last episode name?
Rupture, repair, repeat.
Rupture, repair piece in the room with your client where you can lead and guide and model a healthy, difficult conversation, in a non-judgmental, graceful, open way, that can show clients that that's possible, that maybe have never had a healthy conversation like that, right? Especially like me working with kids and teens, that truly might be their first time seeing a conversation that feels equal with an adult, right?
Listen, I've only ever worked with adults and college kids. Some of them have never had someone sit
Sure.
across from them and be like, what you're saying makes total sense.
Yeah. And
Your
I'm
feelings aren't too
sorry.
big.
Yeah. I'm sorry that
Everything.
I did that rupture in there, right? And taking accountability, seeing what that looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. And so
And
then that kind of.
that takes humility
Courage. Oh,
and courage.
not on the same page. Our brain cell is not
It's
working.
a Monday. But the humility aspect is our step number four to the recipe. Would you like to talk about that, Sam?
Yeah, I think the humility and curiosity kind of go hand in hand. Like, if someone is willing, and the humility piece goes on both sides, right? Like, you want to be humble in going in with the idea of like, I'm upset and my feelings are valid, and I am not the only person in this recipe. I'm not the only person in this equation. I'm not the only factor. There's a whole other human with an entire life, an entire like mindset, an entire worldview that is separate from mine. And being humble enough to know that that plays a role in what's actually happening. And Sam and I have talked before, I think, about like how we tell ourselves stories, right? So our brains fill in the gaps. Like, if someone looks at me funny, I might have a story in my head about, well, they think my outfit's stupid, but they might have just been looking past me and seen somebody doing something weird behind me,
Or that's just their face.
Or that's, you know, my poor mama always says, like, that's just my face. This is just what I look like if I get upset at her reaction. But so I think that the humility piece is really important, of being humble enough to recognize that, like, we are not the only people in
this
an
equation.
interaction.
Yeah.
And being humble enough to appreciate what it takes for someone to come to us if they're coming to us. Like, if someone's coming to us and saying that something we did bothered them, it's probably really hard. And if it's not really hard, then they're probably either really aggressive or really healthy.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, and then the curiosity piece of, like, not getting defensive and trying to take their perspective. Like, be curious. Like, if someone comes at you and kind of blindsides you with something, get curious of, like, well, what was it about that interaction that made you think that? Or what is it about this that you were thinking is negative or hurtful or whatever? And finding the pain.
Yeah.
That's my go-to with everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Because all behavior is purposeful, right? We don't just get mad and throw a fit because it's a Tuesday morning. Like, we, you know,
Well, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, depending if you're a morning person or not, right? And but then again, there's a purpose for it. I didn't eat. I'm hungry. You hurt my feelings. What was said hurt my feelings, right? Or, and sometimes it's hard to want to be that curious piece, right? Because we're so focused on what's going on for us, our experience in the moment. And so it is important to slow down, which will come next in our regulation skills, but being able to slow down and look at it from the other end, and see that they're struggling with this as well. And sometimes not. Sometimes we approach someone and they're like, I had no idea this was bothering you. This had did, wasn't a second thought for me, right? But that's the piece, is that their perspective is that it wasn't anything to think, give a second thought to. But for us, it's been something that's been ruminating for 2 weeks. So being able to look at both sides is important.
And being able to get curious about yourself, like, the curiosity and the humility isn't just looking at that other person, but it's looking at ourselves too, of why is this bothering me so much? Yeah. What is coming up? What heart pain is being activated for me? Like, is it that I'm feeling like this person's judging me and I've felt this before? Like, just getting curious about what's coming up for us. What purpose is this anger serving? What need are we trying to get met by having this feeling, by having this experience, by needing to have this conversation? What are we trying to get out of that? And if we can figure that out, a lot of times telling that other person can be really helpful to just, like, explain what's going on. And for me, like, a lot of times when I get really angry, it's easy to, like, dehumanize people, not just, like, me in particular, but, like, as a whole. We talked about that in the last episode. Like, it's really easy, especially, like, via text and, like, even phone calls. Like, when you're not having to, like, look that person in the face, it's easy to forget that you're with a whole other person. So getting curious about their experience and why they might have done what's going on, and not curious like, I'm going to make up a story in my head curious, but, like, I'm going to ask you questions and show up. Like, if you start seeing somebody get activated, hey, I'm noticing that you're starting to kind of raise your voice. I'm wondering what's going on for you right now. Like, I use that with clients all the time. Like, they'll be telling me this big story and they'll be getting so emotional and overwhelmed. And then they'll say that they're cool and they're calm. And I'm like, yeah, so I'm noticing that you're saying you're calm right now, but your body is not looking super calm. Can you help me understand what's going on with that? And that's a therapy thing. But I will say, though, from personal experience, I will say, we're going to give you all of these things, right? But at the end of the day, you might be walking in with the best intention and with all the skills with someone who is not, they're not bad, but they're dysregulated. They're not ready to have these conversations. And I think so often that you made a really good point, Sam, when you were talking about, you know, well, your family wanted to just move on and pretend like nothing happened. And I think that I've had experience going into conversations with people who come from spaces like that, where my family was like knocked down, drag out, like my family was very disorganized of like, we would talk about everything and be way too enmeshed, but also like vehemently defend each other, even when we were doing terrible things. It was very chaotic. It was very confusing. The disorganized attachment was rampant, but I'm very like open and I'm like, hey, and also the whole counseling skills thing and like being a therapist. So I go in and say, hey, you know, the story I have in my head is that you are upset with me and I can't really figure out why. I'm worried that it's this. Can you tell me what's going on for you? And they're like, I'm not upset with you. Oh my God, why would you think that? And I'm like, okay. So you're saying you're not upset, but you are yelling right now. And that's really confusing for me. And then that just kind of spirals into worse and worse and worse, because when people feel misunderstood, when people feel attacked, there's a lot of different things that can come up. And it, like, even if you go in with all the skills and the perfect recipe, like, it's not always going to work. And that doesn't mean that you're wrong or you're bad. And that doesn't mean that other person's wrong or bad.
And I'm so glad you said that, because for a long time, Craig would, you know, ask if everything's okay. And if you know the episode or the name of this podcast, you know my response was, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Why? Everything's fine. You know that meme of the dog sitting at the counter drinking his coffee and
the
everything's
house is
on
on fire?
Yeah, and he's like, this is fine. That's me to a T. And Craig would call BS on it. And he would ask me if I'm okay. I'd say yes immediately. Like, that would send cortisol through my body just by being asked if I'm okay. Why, you ask? Why, you ask? Because I am dealing with avoidance is so hard, because you don't know how to connect with that piece. And you've gotten so used to not connecting with it that that's where we're talking about, like, the dentist piece earlier, right? It's like, the longer I go, the harder it is. And Craig can see there's clearly something wrong, but I genuinely don't. And that's the thing, is that I had to come to a realization for myself, is that I'm not trying to lie and gaslight my husband into saying that I'm fine. I'm lying and gaslighting myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to like squeeze you. And I want to squeeze
I'm
you
fine.
because
There's a fire.
I just want to squeeze you because I think my husband struggles with the same thing, where genuinely he will be like, everything's fine. And then like have a few days to chew on it and be like, not fine.
Everything's not fine. Yeah.
But as an anxious attachment person, as someone who grew up in a very disorganized home, to keep myself safe, I had to be so hyper aware of everybody around me and what was going on. And so as an adult, trying to unlearn that is so difficult. And what's really difficult, because I'm like, the family that I married into is completely opposite of my family. They're like, no, everything. They're like your family. Like, everything's fine. We don't need to talk about it. We don't have to talk about anything.
Yeah.
The weather's great. What movies are you watching right now? And I'm like, no.
A liar.
No, it's so funny because I feel like I've been a disruptor in that space, and some of them are okay with it, some aren't. It is what it is. But I think that it's so difficult for me because like I can feel the eensiest, tiniest. I'm like one of those, I have antenna, and it's like I can feel like the electrical signals in the air change when your heart rate goes up, you know, like I can tell. And it's so funny because Tyler makes a joke like, you'll know what's going on with me before I'll know what's going on with me.
Well, that's exactly word for word what I've told Craig. Because it's true. He's able to see it so much faster than I am. And where I initially brought this in is because I used to get really frustrated with him when he would ask me over and over, because I would say, I'm fine, and you're assuming that I'm not, and that's why I'm mad now.
Yeah, because you're not believing you.
Because I felt like I wasn't being believed and that my word wasn't being respected. But what really was happening is that I was already dysregulated. He called it out, and he's calling out my lie to myself,
Yeah.
right? So that voice in my head who's like, shut up, don't tell her that, is the one coming out and getting mad at him.
But he's doing that in an attempt to stay safe as well, probably.
Yes, absolutely. Because with anxious attachment, he's the quote unquote target in his head of where my
Anger.
dysregulation and anger is. But it's not. It could be literally anything. And
Yeah.
but ask me, I wouldn't know because I didn't know it was there in the first place. But and that attachment work takes a lot of learning and memory.
Years.
Years, literally. I
Can you still
still,
hear me?
yeah.
Okay, I thought I pressed the mute button when I grabbed the microphone.
And it takes a huge chunk of courage and vulnerability. It takes that just recognizing that pattern. And that's where this awareness piece in our second step in this recipe is that I know that I can get into this state. And if this is making sense for you, then be sure to listen to our attachment avoidant and disorganized episode, because this goes into when we get into relationships or have children, we're constantly around triggers. Constantly. Every trauma in our life is being triggered. We knew one way of how to be around the people that maybe they were consistent or not consistent, but we knew. We figured it out. We learned those people. Kids are probably the most inconsistent and can't give answers all the time, right? Especially when they're little and can't talk.
And they
We
can't regulate.
they
You have
can't.
to regulate for them.
Yes, and that's the biggest piece is I know it's hard for parents when they hear that, parents are a big piece in their children's behaviors. But it's true because that's what they're being modeled. And how I've been describing it to my parents to kind of take some weight off, because there's a shame piece involved in that of, oh my God, like, am I causing my child to act this way? That let's take away the cause piece, because it's how we are struggling to regulate that might be affecting this piece, but it's not us that is affecting that piece, right? And so I kind of describe it as like, imagine you just have paparazzi around you all day, every day, and you don't get to decide what goes in the tabloids, what they're videoing and taking pictures of when they see us unregulated or dysregulated and yelling and screaming and avoiding, and they're taking that in. They're taking pictures of that and posting it in their tabloid. We don't have any option for them to see the good pieces unless that's what we're consistently modeling. And
But I do
so,
want to, I really want to interject there
yeah.
with even if you, we're all going to get dysregulated. And like,
Yes,
this
yes.
is for parents. Like, Sam and I are not parents, but
Yes.
I think we've both, like, between school, Sam works with kids. I have, God, I think there's 15 children just in like my immediate little family circle. So, like, I've watched lots of people be pregnant, have babies, kids grow up, like, just being around all that and learning what we've learned, like, even if you get dysregulated pretty regularly, like the biggest thing I can say about that is talk to your kids, talk to them,
Repair.
repair,
Yes.
say, hey, I'm sorry that I yelled at you.
Yes.
Talk to your kids like you would talk that you
To
like you would
another
want to be
adult.
talked to.
Yeah.
Yes. Like apologize just because they're kids, like they're still human beings. And if you teach them that, like if somebody yells at you, like sometimes things happen and people yell, and it's not okay for people to just yell and scream at you all day, every day. We need to have apologies, we need to have repair, we need to have
Yes.
explanations, and they
Yes.
deserve that
Yes.
all through all life stages.
Yes.
And that is so helpful.
Yes. And the biggest piece for this is to take away and work on the shame that we have in relationships as parents, as partners, as children ourselves to our own family. And And as friends, we come with a lot of shame, because life throws shame our way all the time, whether it's through media, whether through it's our upbringing, whether it's through school grades. I mean, so many different things that could have implanted a not good enough belief or a shameful belief in ourselves. So to recognize the pieces that trigger us in these conversations, going in prepared, but also having that flexibility piece. And this goes into the regulation skills of just slow down. Like, you do not have to respond immediately. You do not have to fill silence. The best thing I think I've learned as a counselor and in the program is to literally shut up sometimes. And I say that with all the love in the world, is because it's true. Like, there,
it's so true.
You feel the need to respond immediately, and you don't need to. You can say, like, I've learned with my communication conversations with Craig, is I'll look up and I'll, or even with my clients, and I'll say, hang on, I'm thinking, give me a second. Because I just need a moment to gather my thoughts, because sometimes my thoughts are saying things that I don't want to say out loud, or it's almost like a placeholder thought of like, this isn't actually what I want to say. Give yourself time, give yourself a second, and allow that space for the other person too.
Yes. I love how you've gone. So our fifth thing is the regulation skills.
Yes.
And that slowing is huge. Yeah. I know what you mean. With my clients, it's so funny. I'll look up and I'll say, I want to take a minute and make sure I say this the way that I mean it.
Yes. Yes.
And they're like, well, okay, whatever. Or if I find myself starting and like stumbling over my words, I'm like, I'm going to pause. I'm going to take a second. I want to make sure that I say this in a way that makes sense, in a way that feels aligned with what I'm actually feeling and thinking and trying to convey.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny because when we do that, we're modeling, and we can do that with our kids too. We can
yes.
do that. Like, woo, y'all, I've had kids like testing me lately. I really have, just like pushing buttons and like doing stuff like to intentionally like upset me. And
so what I'm saying, they're actual, the one of the biggest triggers that exist, right? Like, they yeah. laugh when we're angry. How
okay.
many people is that a trigger for?
At my goddaughter, I love her. She is literally as close to my own child as I could have. I love this kid like with my entire soul. I would give my life for this child. I love her. I have a tattoo for her. She is like, I love her. But she is so funny and mischievous now. And so I went to see her the other day. We all met up, and the last two times I've seen her, the first thing she does is she sees me and she goes, Nanny! And I'm like, oh, how sweet. Oh, and I get so excited. And she runs up to me. And the first time she ran up to me and like opened her arms out like she wanted to give me a big hug. And I was like, oh, I was trying to get down out of my chair so I could give her a hug. And I have a white shirt on. She takes her rainbow face painted face and grabs my shirt and goes, wah. And I'm like,
wiped her face.
And I like immediately, like I was going to give her a hug, and so my hands were like down by her. So I pulled her shoulders back and I said, Nanny does not like that. And I do not like hugs like that. Please, thank you. And then she's like, ha ha ha, and then runs off. And I'm like, mm-hmm. oh my God, I mm-hmm. was so dysregulated. I was like, why mm-hmm. would you purpose, like, she's so smart. Why would you purposely do that to upset me? Like, you knew that was not nice, because she had done it to several other people and they got mad. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh my God, okay. So then I see her a couple weeks later. She runs up to me again, arms out, Nanny. And I'm like, oh, my baby, this kid, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Okay.
No shame on anyone.
I'm like, I'm watching you now, kid. But she walks up to me. She had been eating Cheetos and her fingers were covered in Cheeto dust. And she says, she walks up and she gives me a hug, a normal hug. And I was like, oh, so sweet. And then she takes a step back and she looks at me and she says, here's your Cheetos, and wipes her sticky spit Cheeto fingers on my face. And I have sensory issues. I will say that right now. Part of my neurospicy is sensory issues. So to feel greasy, like on your my pores. Face. And it was hot, and I had just put on sunscreen because we were outside, and I was like, so I said, I do not like that. That was not very nice at all. And I stood up, but on the inside, I'm screaming. She is so, I love her so much for so many reasons. And one of the reasons is she pushes all of my trigger buttons about kids. And she has given me such good practice. Like, I've never screamed at her. And I took her to the zoo once, or the aquarium. Okay. I've never screamed at this kid. I've practiced my gentle parenting skills, but it's like you said, slow. And this was a very long way to get around all that, but like slowing down, like the minute I feel that adrenaline, I immediately make myself take a breath.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to think of the nicest thing I can say. And like, that is not okay. Instead of, what are you doing? I'm just like, I do not like that. You know, that's not okay. Please do not do that to me again. I'm not going to play with you. I'm not going to get down and give you hugs if you're going to do stuff like that. That was not very nice at all. Like,
yeah. Right.
And then I give her a minute and then we play and we're fine. Like, she's good. And I've seen her and she's come and given me hugs. It's been so sweet since then. Like, she's fine. But it's just.
But it's that piece of that trigger and slow down. And that we're going to get triggered in difficult conversations. People are going to say things they don't mean. We might say things we don't mean, but slowing down can put an extra prevention measure towards that, because a lot of the times when we say things we don't mean, we say it because we're not thinking before we say it.
Yes. It's so easy. Like, I think about that feeling of like the adrenaline.
Yes.
And I was just looking at this study the other day about how like our face reacts to our triggers before our brains can. So like
when
so when a stimuli comes in to our brain through our eyes, the reaction time to our face is like half of the reaction time to our brain. It's all like in like a
millisecond
of a second. So like it's all like super quick, like the time, the numbers are very small, but it's like your face, the reaction that sends the like muscle response to your face happens before your brain. So like, that's why they're like, your face is going to give you away. But I say that to say like, even if you have like a face reaction, like my husband scared me and my initial reaction when I get scared is pissed. And he's like, oh my God, I thought you were going to punch me. And I'm like, but I literally, as soon as I felt that, I've been working on training to like pause. Like you can feel that and then just stop for just a second before you do anything. Don't move, like don't trying to pause myself a little bit, that way we can have a minute, because people might say something when you're in the middle of a conversation and difficult, and you can be so regulated and so like prepared for this conversation, and they say that thing that's just
they
like,
say that one trigger word and you're like, you know what, I was trying to be nice, but here it is.
Gloves.
Listen to the episode on stop, regulate, and listen, and get into your regulation skills. But that's this part of the recipe. One of the other things that we wanted to mention is that there's a confrontation piece that comes along with difficult conversations, right? We're confronting somebody about maybe how something was handled, maybe something that was said. But confrontation, the word itself, has such a aggressive connotation to it, I feel like, where we think of confrontations like, oh, I'm not confrontational. That's this like, yeah, fight, right? But there's a very gentle way to confront somebody. And we use confrontation all of the time in counseling, right? Where Sam said earlier, where she said a client who is saying that everything's fine, but their body is saying something different. We can gently confront and saying, I'm having a difficult time understanding where, you know, I'm hearing us say that I'm doing okay, everything's fine, but your body is telling me something different, and I'm wondering what that is, right? That is a gentle confrontation. We can have that. It doesn't have to be an aggressive confrontation.
We like to call that in therapy, in Dr. Lehman's class, a peanut butter and sardine sandwich.
An inedible sandwich.
Yes. Peanut butter, sardines.
Blech.
Take a bite.
Yeah.
And you can do that, like Sam said, you're not trying to fight this person. You're not being like, well, you're acting pretty pissed for somebody who's not pissed. Like, you're not saying it like that. You're saying, Well, I'm seeing this is actually physically happening in you right now, but you're saying this, and I'm struggling to see where those go together.
I'm struggling to understand. Like,
Yeah.
help me understand. That's what
Yeah.
coming from a curious piece is like, I want to be able to hear and understand you properly. And if I'm not, please tell me, because this doesn't make sense to me. And the thing is, again, they probably don't realize they're doing it.
Yeah.
And that might cause them to go on the defense. Hello to all my fellow avoidants. Okay. Have some patience. They might not know that that's a piece for them. It took me a very long time to figure out for myself. And it's, if it's truly not something that affects us directly, that we can move on into the conversation from, okay. Like if that's something that they're just not ready to approach of how they're feeling in the moment, that's fine. Get to the piece of the conversation of why we're here. Get back to that role. And move forward. But this, the biggest part about this recipe is practicing it, right? Like, I want us to look at difficult conversations like they're macaroons. Like, if you've ever made a macaroon, you know that they're the most difficult thing in the world to make, right? Have you ever made them?
Sam, you freak me out sometimes with how much you read my literal mind, because I was just about to say
Serious?
The macaroon analogy, because they're so hard to make.
Yes, they are so hard to make. They literally, you can have an exact recipe, but your oven emits heat differently, and so you can't go by that recipe. Like, macaroons are so hard to make. Difficult conversations are so hard to have, and you have to
Yes.
practice until you get into the swing of things, and you can play around with it, because each difficult conversation is different. Each macaroon is different. Like, you can
Yes.
also use the same oven, same recipe that's
But if
worked
it's too
for.
humid,
If
if
it's
it's.
the weather outside, you never know. So you being able to prepare for all these other things and be willing to try again, biggest part.
Yes. Yes. And it, God, that is so freaking hilarious that you were thinking the same thing. But
Here's our brain cell.
literally,
They're back.
They're back. We're back. We're back on track. We're back on that. We were not aligned for the
sync.
First little bit. Now we're back in sync. All is well. But truly, like, the thing about macaroons is, if you have ever tried to make macaroons and you have made them properly the first time, I will literally get you a trophy, because that does not happen. Like, it doesn't. It doesn't. It doesn't. My mom, I think my mom, she's really good at making them now. I think she made like 6 batches before she got one right. My sister-in-law makes really good ones too, and she's like perfected it in her like space with how it works for her, but like, it is so hard and like so finicky, and baking is difficult, but
yes.
You have to practice. And again, one of the things with that is, like, when you get really far away from having difficult conversations, if you don't practice little difficult conversations, little ways of doing that, it doesn't have to be this big hour-long sit down heart to heart. It can just be like returning your food if it was cooked wrong at the restaurant. For some people, it's challenging, you know, but if you practice that, if
I
you
will eat
give
it.
yourself permission, Samantha.
Okay. But I've worked in the service industry since I was like a baby. So that's a hard one.
I will eat it. If it's not serious, I will
If
eat
it's
it.
not
But if it's
serious.
terrible, I will
Yeah.
be like, hey, I am so, 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 so
Yeah.
sorry. But
Literally me.
regardless, like, it's okay to ask for your food that if they put the order in completely wrong, it's okay for you to ask for that to be fixed.
Yes.
And it's okay for you to have a difficult conversation. It's okay for you to challenge things. It's okay for you to ask questions. It's okay for you to bring up things at work that aren't working for you. It's okay to do all that. And doing that practices these difficult conversations.
And start with people that you're comfortable with. Talk to your partner, talk to your friend, saying like, or family, and say, hey, I heard this podcast episode. I tend to be more passive with my, I don't know if you hear this dog barking like wild. Okay. Well, anyway, but just having that practice piece allows you to get more confident, build that confidence in having difficult conversations, and just letting someone know that you want to start working on a different way to communicate, can help prepare that too. 'Cause, you know, if we've communicated for one way for so long, that's going to make people be like, what is happening? Are you okay?
Yes.
You know?
When you disrupt the homeostasis that you live in, people get mad.
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 Yeah. We can
But
talk about that in another episode.
Yes. But you can't prepare for all outcomes. And even if you go and you have five really, really good, difficult conversations, and they go great. You're like, I'm doing great. I'm so good at this.
Yeah.
You're going to mess up. You're going to have a bad one. It's not going to go to plan. Like, you can't plan for everything. And you have to understand that, like, going into this conversation may cause ruptures. But if you go into a conversation and there are ruptures, that gives you this beautiful chance for repair. And if you listen to our last episode about ruptures and repairs, like, that can be a beautiful building process for a relationship. Yeah. So
all the episodes that we're doing, by the way, go hand in hand in being able to hit each of these steps: the planning piece, the awareness piece, the courage piece, humility, regulation. Like, make sure to listen to our previous episodes to help build the foundational skills for having these difficult conversations, and listen to future episodes, because we will continue navigating in a way that this all connects. It's all healing. It's all growth. And we're always going to be growing and healing in our whole life. So,
yeah. And I think coming up, we're hoping to have a guest in the next episode to talk about autism. And we will be recording it during the month of April, which is Autism Acceptance Month. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop,
but
whoop.
it actually won't come out until May, the first week of May, but that's okay. So yeah, we're hoping to have somebody come on and talk about her experience of like having an adult autism assessment and diagnosis, and like what that experience has been like for her. Talk a little bit about like different autism profiles and everything. As counselors, we are not able to diagnose autism. So like what we'll be talking about is from our own personal experiences, trainings that we've done, research that we've done. So like just being mindful that we are not autism experts. But we do all of us that will be on the podcast will have experience in some way with autism touching our lives. So, And then the next episode after that, we are going to do an episode on, attachment styles. Yes.
So get ready.
Yes. So if you guys have any ideas about future episodes, if you want to come on and talk about something with us, reach out, follow us on socials, share with your friends, share with your clients.
Yes, please.
Move around. Yeah.
And we will see you all next week. We hope you enjoyed this episode and have a great Wednesday.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Disclaimer. Sam and Sam are provisional licensed professional counselors. This podcast may include opinions, experiences, and research-backed discussions. This podcast is not meant to diagnose or provide any mental health treatment. The purpose of this podcast is to encourage thoughtful discussions around mental health. If you are seeking mental health services, please reach out to a licensed professional in your state or country that can give you additional resources. Thank you for listening.